Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I'd like to welcome you what's hopefully going to be an interesting hour. Interesting in that I'm going to ask you to share your insights, your opinions, on some issues that normally would not be broadcast. I'm a big believer in inviting a lot of different minds and attitudes to the table. I believe that we only learn when we listen to what someone has to say that might challenge us, to ask us, have we ever tried deconstructing our own beliefs? Today we're going to do that. So I'm going to hold my own opinion because I know that I value yours, so we'll hear what you have to say on these issues. For example, I'm going to read a little email that was sent to me from Roger. And Roger is like so many people. He has been attacked and castigated because he didn't vote for Hillary Clinton as a Democrat. He voted for Trump. Now, maybe he has buyer's remorse. A lot of people should. But why don't we, before we attack someone and call them deplorable and racist and xenophobic, why don't we actually understand who they are? And let's be very clear. These are not all the people we see who are obviously racist, who are xenophobic, who are just really unconscionably imbalanced people in their attitudes. What about all those that don't participate in that, who were once liberal, unionist? Let's hear what they have to say and ask them, why did you break ranks this time? I think there's a lesson to be learned in this, and I'm going to ask you to respond. I'm going to play several things, and I've tied some articles to this that you probably wouldn't read or even know exist, but they're quality articles, that tells us what happens when we have a respect deficit, when we no longer respect the other. And also another article I'm going to be citing is how seeing the good in people helps bridge our differences. I post a lot of stories every day, even though sometimes overnight, trolls and provocateurs will go on and change or post some false stories. We try to eliminate those every morning. I get up very early, so I generally scrub about 10 a day off. Once in a while, one will get through. And people say, wow, why would you post that? Well, I didn't. That happens. But the vast majority of the people coming on, and I'm talking about last time I actually counted, there was a counter that the Facebook had, and it was about 7 million, so it's not a few people that are paying attention to what we're doing. It's a lot. In any case, I try to look at everyone as coming to a site because they want to be inspired, informed, motivated, and so I give a lot of human interest stories, a lot showing what happens when strangers are kind to one another, where we see a whole group of people jumping in to fight a fire. A group of bikers driving down a road, and they see a woman in the middle of the street, an older woman, and they go up, turn around, come back, and then form a barrier blocking off all cars so that woman can walk across the street. Then they go on their way. You know, who does that? Who stops, turns around, comes back to make sure that an older woman doesn't get hit? That says something. But what if that person was Republican and I was a Democrat? Would I condemn them using the idea that because we're politically different or ideologically different that somehow we can't share some humanistic or spiritual qualities? I believe that we have so degraded our ability to communicate and understand the other that we have put ourselves in this endless cycle of emotional and, unfortunately, political imbalance. No good comes from this. And I found the actual quote from Buckminster Fuller, and this is what I'll say on it. It's his words exactly. Quote, "You never change something by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete." Wonderful insights from a unique and original human being. I benefited from the conversations I had with him and George Borgstrom and Rene Dubos and others of that era who are now passed. So we're going to ask you to comment on that when I read what caused a unionist, a lifelong Democrat, to no longer want to be that. Now, I don't want people going from being Democrat or Republican to the other. I'd like to see them become independent and then start to deconstruct their own belief systems at every level, and then start to look at what progressive ideals represent, that our reality helps everyone. It does not exclude people. People were once surprised. In fact, someone got me on the phone, who I won't mention because he's a well-known person within the liberal community, and he said, "Did I get it right that you just called the guy who fired you not long ago because that person is not well and you offered help?" I said, "That's correct." "Why would you do that?" I said, "The fact that he may share different views of what a radio show represent or my being on a station doesn't mean that he's not a human being and he's suffering. And if I can lend some help to him to help him through his crisis, how does doing more for another person make me less as a person? How does doing less for a person because I disagree with him allow me to be more spiritually?" That was my answer. And he just thought it was stupid. And I said, "No, it's not stupid. I've helped a lot of people I hold differences with. That doesn't mean I can't hold a difference of opinion, but still recognize the humanness within them." And I believe that's something that we all have to learn. So we're going to deal with that today. Also, mega fires. I'm going to deal with that today. I'm going to show you short clips, the full clip you can watch on Progressive Radio Network. And you can watch the show on Progressive Radio Network Facebook, as thousands of you are. And it's just to give you an idea of how so many people of color in areas that are poor, Louisiana in particular, and Mississippi, are now being given the backhand of the major refineries, being made susceptible to cancers and livelihood destruction because of the unmitigated greed and the insensitivity and lack of empathy of these major corporations. So we'll deal with that. And also 14 lies that Big Pharma and psychiatrists teach medical students. So if you want to know why your medical a student who becomes doctor only wants to look at you as a deficient in a serotonin reuptake inhibitor, hence giving you Prozac and Zoloft, I'll deal with that as well. But we always begin with the latest on health and healing. And this is from Harvard University School of Public Health, and it was published in Human Reproduction. It says, "Boxers or briefs," meaning men's underwear, "and loose-fitting underwear may benefit sperm production." Quote, "Men who most frequently wore boxer had significantly higher sperm concentrations and total sperm counts when compared with men who did not wear boxers," according to the latest research from Harvard School. Now, why is that important? Well, most men over a certain age are not interested in particularly how many sperm they have or their motility. Younger men wanting to have a child, yes. And when you wear tight-fitting shorts, first of all, I find them excruciatingly uncomfortable. And also, it's hurting the circulation in your upper legs, upper thighs, but also it's adversely affecting nutrients and blood going into the reproductive system. Whereas you're wearing something very loose, it's much more comfortable, and it's healthier for you, and it has the ability to breathe. It's like if a woman wears, and as they did for so many women for so long, hose and made out of synthetic fibers, and where they wore the pantyhose, it came clear up to their hips. It gave, initially, they did not have proper breathing. Later, they would modify that somewhat. But that meant that there was an overgrowth of bacteria in the reproductive system and an overgrowth of candida. Well, that's not healthy. The body has to breathe. So wearing no underwear is the ideal. Exercise, and this is from Yale University, exercise is linked to improved mental health. And it says 1.2 million people in the USA were in this study, and they found that by exercising regularly but not excessively, you have 1.5 fewer days of poor mental health a month. Well, and this was published in the British Psychiatry Journal. So what it means is this. Why? When you exercise aerobically, power walking, biking, in resistance gear, meaning you got to really ride it hard, swimming, then what you're doing, you're creating a rush of endorphins. These are natural opiates that the body releases that help kill pain and are feel good. You feel good. That's why you get what's called a runner's high. And if you do it for about an hour, that'll last about 6 hours. So if you were to do a workout in the morning for 45 minutes and a workout in the evening for 45 minutes, you've got about half your entire day. You're going to be feeling better, less stressed, and you're less likely to get sick because you're increasing your circulation, increasing elimination, less likely to be constipated, and you're going to have a better metabolic rate, a better heart rate. You're protecting your heart, your liver, your kidneys. And all that is because that exercise does all that for you. Now, this is an article from a university here in New York, and it says, what role do inflammatory cytokines play in creating T-cell exhaustion in cancer? And I thought this was very interesting. This was published in Cancer Biotherapy and Radiopharmacology. And what it means is this, that I've said this many times, so maybe this study will put a dot on it. Cancer is pro-inflammatory. And it starts off by being inflammatory in the colon or the breast or the prostate or the skin or the brain. And the more inflammation you have, the greater likelihood that it'll become a cancer. So what do you do? First, stop doing things that cause inflammation, like alcohol, coffee, meat, fried foods, the kind of foods you see advertised on television, and then have foods that are anti-inflammatory. Your fruits and vegetables, fresh-made juices, apple juice, orange juice, grapefruit juice, spike it with ginger and lemon and tomato juice. Those are all pro-healing. Anti-inflammatory. Watermelon is probably one of your best single juices. In fact, you want the best juice to turn off inflammation from cancer to arthritis, from dementia to bursitis. Take watermelon with the seed and then have a 16-ounce glass of watermelon and then ginger, about 2 ounces, and lemon, two whole lemons or limes, and then drink that down. That is a phenomenal anti-inflammatory juice. So, get rid of the inflammation, you're getting rid of cancer. Because wherever you see cancer, you've got inflammation. And what causes, and I posted a picture yesterday of an arm of a woman. And it's all burned. And what happened was this woman was getting chemotherapy and some got on her arm. So here is simple common sense. If chemotherapy can cause a second-degree burn on a patient's arm, what do you think it's doing inside the arteries in the bloodstream? So many ways to approach cancer. Chemotherapy, not smart. And finally, from a university in Spain, it says resveratrol, the key to reducing elderly fragility. And it says the so-called red wine nutrient, actually it's not the red wine nutrient, remember, it's the grape and blueberry nutrient, may help maintain muscle performance and reduce frailty in the elderly. Quote, our results indicate that resveratrol can be considered an ergogenic compound that helps maintain muscle performance during aging and subsequently reduces frailty and increases muscle performance in old individuals practicing moderate exercise. Good. And this was also from Vietnam National University in Hanoi, Vietnam. So old polyphenols, young results, meaning you got to get the resveratrol. Grape juice, grape powder, which is the most powerful, and grape. I have grapes every single day, 7 days a week in my body because I know what it does. Of the top 10 foods I put in my body every day, grapes are in the top three. We just don't need a lot of grapes in our country. And it's not the white grape. It's the blue, the black, and the red that are most powerful. If you want to go one step further, it's the grape skin and the grape seed that's the most powerful healing. And tomorrow I'm going to talk about the monster food that is, according to the American Chemical Society, the most powerful compound for taming cardiovascular disease. What is that? You'll find that out tomorrow. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, I'm going to go to a walkaway clip, and then I'm going to comment on it, and then I'm going to ask you to comment on it. And our comment number is 888-874-4888. I'll hold my thoughts until you share yours, but I want to know what people are doing and why. Why are you doing something? What I'm not going to do, what I never do, is condemn someone and then try to find a reason to justify it. I'm going to listen to someone. How in the world can you understand someone until you understand what they're doing and why? Now, you can agree or disagree with what they're doing. That's fine. But let's hear them out. Then let's have a dialogue on it to see if it makes sense or doesn't. Back in a moment.
Movement continues to gain traction online. The social media campaign urges liberals to detach themselves from the Democratic Party.
For years now, I have watched as the left has devolved into intolerant, inflexible, illogical, hateful, misguided, ill-informed, un-American, hypocritical, menacing, callous, ignorant, narrow-minded, and at times, blatantly fascistic behavior and rhetoric. These are the reasons why I became a liberal. And these are the same reasons why I am now walking away.
What's up, walk away movement? My name is Devin Cates.
This is my walk away story.
This is my walk away story.
I have been a lifelong moderate Democrat. I never really questioned a lot of the things that went on.
Different between Democrats and Republicans, I was just taught in grade school that Democrats cared about the people, the poor and unfortunate, and that Republicans cared about the rich and wealthy. That's all I was told.
When Hillary ran for president, I felt sick. I did not like this woman. Her corruption, to me, was unprecedented.
They oppose all of the things that are going to make the black community better. They oppose all of the things that are going to move our community forward. Their policies do not work. Yet they keep asking us to vote for them.
The attempt to dismantle our Constitution and our rights as citizens of this country.
Let's look at crime rates in cities that Democrats control. It's very clear to anybody who's looking objectively that there needs to be a shift. And black people are starting to wake up. And we're starting to realize that the people who are selling us these wolf tickets don't really have our best interests at heart.
But the more I look, the more things happen. The crazier the left got, the more I realize I had
found something, and I realized I was part of the sheep before, and I was getting out.
And enough is enough.
And I hope that my story can help some of you out there and make you realize that we've all been through the same thing, and we're all waking up.
It's time to stop. It's time to break the cycle.
And I realized I was part of the sheep before, and I was getting out, and I'm out. I'm no longer, I will never vote Democrat again, and we're finally walking away.
That's my story. That's me. That's where I'm at. Walk away.
We're walking away. For all of these reasons, I am walking away. You've left me in your toxic dust. I'm an American first, and I love my country. So.
Okay, those are just some individuals. And since you couldn't see the video, it was probably 80% African American. The idea that an African American would be speaking out against the Democratic Party and its positions and its leadership is pretty unprecedented. And I believe, and I'm evolved from being a Democrat and liberal to a progressive after I started looking for the truth and found that. So I just look for the truth wherever it is and focus upon the truth. And if you're bound by ideology, you're not going to find the truth. And so what's happening now is there's this attacking Latinos and blacks if they're not in step with the corporate Democrat machine. Once again saying everything will be better this time around. And if Hillary had been elected, it would have been better. And a lot of those people went back and started, as I have and I've shared with this audience, shared what did the Clintons do when they had the power, when they had Congress? What laws were passed? Did we release people from prison? Did we de-ghettoize America? Did we insist that jobs remain in America? Did we increase the standard of living? Did we stop all the private prison systems? Did we stop the wars? No, we didn't. But if you're a true believer, then you're not in a political party. You're in a cult. Now, we've already seen how the Republicans have been a cult for a long time. There's just no way to reach these people's consciousness. So a lot of people are walking in. If you don't think that's the case and say it's all Russian bots, that was the excuse, boy, are you missing what's happening. You could go online now, and if you started watching those people giving testimonials who are walking away, you'd still be here a week from today, 24/7 watching. I mean, it's a lot. Now, I'm asking Republicans to walk away. Walk away from the corruption, from the megalomania, from the military-industrial complex and Wall Street and gas hydrofracking and the production of foods that we know cause disease. How can you vote for someone who's taken money from a sponsor and that product is going to cause disease? They don't have your interests at stake. But both parties are equally guilty. We need a vibrant group of new independent parties working cooperatively together, as Buckminster Fuller said, to create new and better systems that then make what they represent look absolutely archaic by example. Now, there's two articles here. One is from Eon, a really good magazine, and this is the current article, and it says, "The Respect Deficit." Quote, "Economic inequality is an urgent problem. Deeper still is our loss of mutual respect, the foundation of a fair society." And it goes on to talk about, at the end of 2017, the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority launched a new ad campaign. The authority wasn't selling anything. It was asking, on behalf of its bus drivers, for something that liberal societies need in order to flourish, that underpins social equality, and that is, in short, respect. In each of the ads, a photo of the bus driver was accompanied by a biographical sketch, and which read something like, "Mom, friend, Metro bus driver," followed by a personal plea, "I hope you see all the things I am and respect beyond driving this bus. Like, I respect you." The ads were a reaction to a sharp increase in the number of drivers subjected to verbal and physical abuse. Drivers were punched, spat upon, and screamed at. In one case, a woman threw a cup of her own urine, collected during the journey at a driver. Employee injuries rose by 50% in the summer 2017. Practical responses, including more robust protective screens, sealing drivers off from passengers, and increased police presence. But this ad campaign tried to tackle the problem at its source, the relationship between passengers and drivers. It does so by appealing to a certain kind of equality. Equality not of resources, but of respect. So imagine if we, before we attack people, before we called them names, before we thought that it was our right to physically assault them, as I just saw a video where a woman comes up to a man who is protesting in silence and about fascism, and the woman slugs him, sucker punches him, and everybody cheers her. Well, who are you violently attacking a person who is doing no harm? Who are you representing? You're not representing me. Physical violence, hurting people, attacking people with clubs, that's not civil. That's not going to change anyone's mind. I never will forget one of the very first radio shows I did on vegetarianism. I invited the head of a vegetarian movement to come on the show, and he did, and he said there was going to be a demonstration handing out leaflets down in front of Macy's. And I said, good. And I went down there to give them support. What I saw was that as older women were coming out of Macy's butcher shop, they had paint thrown all over their head, and if they had a coat on their coat. And they were cheering each time. Now, mind you, these women weren't being talked with. They were being assaulted. So I went over and I said, stop this. I said, you have no right to demean this woman. You don't know what that person is going to go through. You don't know what that person... Well, but they're eating meat. Therefore, anything I give them deserves because I'm here to protect the interests of the cow. I said, that's the wrong way to approach it. Do you think Gandhi used the hundreds of millions of people that were participating in the marches and the Salt March and other things to stop the hegemony of the British Empire? No, it was nonviolence. Martin Luther King, nonviolence. Nonviolence and dialoguing and positive solutions is how you change things that are wrong, not by assaulting. So what's this going to happen? This woman's going to go home, and she's going to have paint in her hair. The probability is that a lot of that paint is going to not come out, and they're going to have their heads, all their hair shaved. Now, maybe that person wore a coat, an animal skin coat. You're assuming that they understand the responsibility they have before they bought the coat. You're not looking at their culture, their background, their conditioning. You're not looking at where they came from. These are older women. This is the early 1970s. That means they came from a different generation. They may not have your values. Wouldn't it have been better just to hand them a sheet of paper of what it means to go vegan and give them information on what it means to stop the suffering of the animals? But you didn't do that. I'm seeing that again today. I'm seeing this kind of ultra-violent rhetoric and actions. It doesn't help solve any problem. It only compounds it, because I can promise you this, for every one of those women who went home, you just lost a whole family and their friendships of their family's support for anything in the future. I remember once there was a guy on BAI who was really anti-Semitic. And I went over to him one day and I said, you do realize that the number one group of people supporting this station are Jews. Do you really think it's a good idea to assault them? So a group of rabbis came and they said, Gary, we listen to your show. We really like it. You come to our synagogues, you lecture, and you help us. But why don't you tell the people who are really anti-Semitic, invite us on the program to debate us. Let us share a dialogue. Not everyone who's Jewish is Zionist. In fact, the ultra-Orthodox are actually anti-Zionist. Let us at least share a forum. So I went back to the station manager, program director, and I said, why don't you have a forum? Let them debate. Be interesting. Nope, the guy wouldn't debate. Just attack. Well, guess who decided to stop supporting WBAI in a major way? The entire Orthodox Jewish community just stopped. And so someone felt proud about it. I showed them, yeah, friend, what exactly did you show? And how did that benefit the station? And how many times have we made these mistakes, stupid mistakes, because of lack of professional management and lack of professional moral standards on the air? So there's a consequence to every one of those things. You think you're a big shot because you go sucker punch someone and everybody cheers you, your little group cheers you? You don't represent the people who are seeking to dialogue peacefully and honorably. But that's where we're at this moment, and it's going to get worse. So that's one article. Just remember, before you attack someone, why don't you spend some time seeing if you can find anything in what they do that you can respect? Remember I said there were a group of men who, all strangers, and there was a dog, and I posted it, and they all made a human chain down this side of this drain, this about 30-foot drain pipe, and they got the dog and brought it up. You can't help but say, good for you. You don't say, I can't say good for you because you're a Republican or you're a Democrat or you're a conservative, liberal. How stupid would that be? Find something in someone that you can respect. Unless you can find nothing you can respect, then you know that's someone I'm not going to be able to communicate with, but I tried. Let's try before we condemn. This is from Jill Sudi, The Greater Good at the University of California, Berkeley. Quote, how seeing the good in people can help bridge our differences. And just as an aside, when we were being told how dangerous Russia was, and I said this on the air, I don't know if you remember this or not, I said, look, before you allow yourself to align with NATO, which is aligned with Britain and France and other countries that have an ideological and a political need to destroy Russia, and all the contractors in Washington will profit from this, why don't you first ask yourself, what do you think is the difference or similarities between a Russian farmer and an American farmer? And what do you bet that if the Russian farmer and the American farmer got together and spent an afternoon together, they're going to find they have a lot more in common than why they should be enemies, why they should want to see each other destroyed? But we're not allowing farmers to talk with one another, or seamsters to talk with another, or school teachers to talk with one another. No, we allow people who have no empathy for what happens to the other. And when empathy is gone, man, you've disconnected from what we should be valuing in life. Here's what she says, quote, Americans seem awfully divided these days. Everywhere I look, I see signs of antagonism and conflict between groups, and many politicians seem intent on making it worse, whether it's presidential nominee Hillary Clinton calling Trump supporters deplorables, or President Trump referring to Mexican immigrants as rapists and murderers. Their words demonstrate contempt for others, fueling distrust and divisiveness. Perhaps that's why a recent USA Today poll revealed that many voters consider their political opponents to be hateful, stupid, or racist. What are the solutions? There are many, no doubt. But here's one to consider: moral elevation. That's the warm, uplifting feeling that people experience when they see unexpected acts of human goodness, kindness, courage, or compassion. University of Virginia psychologist Jonathan Haidt, take for example the undocumented immigrant in Paris who saved a child dangling from a balcony, or the boy who raised over $1 million to help fund a cure for his friend's rare disease. Oh, and by the way, in that respect, I just posted one of a couple. A woman, you might have seen this if you go to the Facebook. A woman ran out of gas, and right by where she had run out of gas, a man comes over and saw that she was out of gas, and he said, lock your door, don't let anyone in. And he went to a filling station, walked to a filling station, and he only had $20, and he filled up the car with gas with his last penny. Total stranger. A homeless man. He had no home. His $20 all he had, and he gave it to a stranger so she would get home. Think of that. When was the last time you did that? Well, he did it. Guess what she did? Her husband and her went back out and found him. Talk with him. He was a victim of post-traumatic stress disorder. He was a vet. And so many vets, I counted about 800,000 have been adversely affected by the conflict, but no help when they came home. And they started to fund me, and they were able to fund him so he got an apartment. Now he's helping others, other vets. That's what it means to look for the good in people instead of hating them because they're a different class, a different ethnicity, a different religion, a different social position. So that's what I want us to think about before we began this whole process of believing that one party or the other has all of our answers, and if we just support that party, everything's going to be all right. It isn't. Here's what I said at the beginning. This is from Roger, one of those people. He says, I've noticed that a lot of people aren't graciously accepting the fact that their candidate lost. Some are apparently triggered because they're posting how sick they feel. How did it happen? Here's how it happened. I'll just read you a few of these. Quote, you created us when you attacked our freedom of speech. You created us when you constantly referred to us as racist. You created us when you constantly called us xenophobic. You created us when you decided to let our government get out of control. You created us, the silent majority. You created us when you allowed our jobs to continue to leave our country. And we became fed up, and we pushed back and spoke up. We did it with ballots, not bullets. With ballots, not riots. With ballots, not looting. With ballots, not blocking traffic. With ballots, not fires, except the one you started inside of us. You created us. It's really just that simple. Now, how many of the 63 million people is he referring to? I don't know. But I do know this. I've spoken with a lot of people, unionists in different cities, who've been out of work or can't find work where they used to because their jobs were outsourced by the very people who said, vote for us and we'll protect you, like the Clintons, and then created NAFTA and GATT and the World Trade Organization. So at a certain point, what you're getting is you're getting negative backlash from people that you had in your back pocket and you abused. So just remember that. Going forward, maybe it's time for the leadership of the Democratic Party to reconsider the real needs of your former and current constituents, and especially young people. You want to do something right? You want to get some of those people back? How about trying this? How about having the entire Democratic establishment make a policy and go for new laws, even if they're going to be fought by Republicans, which they will be, to forgive all student debt, to have universal health care, to be able to stop all the conflicts and pull out of these countries, to be able to stop predatory loans and get rid of all these high interest rates, to be able to stop home foreclosures. Take your pick. I have 100 different progressive platforms that if you got behind and really meant it, you get people's trust back. I'd like to see you do that instead of, as a Yale University study said, you never listen to the public. You only listen to your lobbyists, the people that pay you money. Some thoughts. I'd like your feedback now, your thoughts on how we have denigrated ourselves by denigrating each other and not looking for the best in each other, what we have in common, and a new type of dialogue and looking for positive solutions that are inclusive of everyone. Do not exclude people in your solutions. Universal truths are far more valid than individual truths. 888-874-4888. Now let's shift from talking about health and healing, which we do every day on this program, to something that is important. And I just want to share a commentary with you from Countercurrents called Bonfire of Humanity from Paul Edwards. I believe that many of you would agree with him, in part or whole. And these are the things we're not talking about in our society. We're just not having this conversation, and we should. And it deals with looking at the human condition. Let's say that you're an alcoholic or you're a drug addict. And now compare that to what I discuss all the time on this show, which is America's deep state. The war machine. Now, there's the deep state, the pharmaceutical industry, deep state Wall Street. There's the deep state, big agriculture like Monsanto. The deep state, the energy cartels, such as gas hydrofracking and oil and nuclear. But for our purposes, and what I want to share with you is the war machine. How many times have I discussed with you that it really is insignificant to the people in control, whether you're Democrat or Republican, conservative or liberal. That's merely window dressing. To them, it's about power. Because if they can control the media, including the internet, and they do with Google and Facebook and Twitter, then they control the information that reaches us. When they don't like something being said, they can censor you. Call you fake news. Now, granted, I am the first to tell you that a disproportionate large amount of information on the internet is inaccurate. It's just, it's wrong. And all the time, people are going to my Facebook page and saying, Gary, I just read such and such. Is this true? We do our homework. We go to the original source to see who said it and if it's credible and what evidence does it have. And then I post, yes, it is accurate, or no, it's not. And you have no idea how many times people will say, wow, you know, I didn't know that that was false. Lots of false information on the internet. So it really is a caveat emptor, which means consumer beware. It's up to us not to automatically believe everything on the internet. But there are groups like Black Agenda Report and Countercurrents and Op-Ed News and Consortium News. There's at least The Natural Blaze, and Green Med Info and Global Research, there is at least 150 groups sharing information on the internet that are more or less almost all the time accurate. They're not a part of any deep state. So what if they're telling you one thing, but the people on television are telling you another thing? And what if our ideological leaders are telling you one thing, but the truth is completely different? Who do you believe? And therefore, when the question is asked by Paul Edwards, what's the difference between an alcoholic or a junkie and the American deep state war machine? He says, quote, nothing. There isn't any difference. How so? And here's the lesson I wanted to share with all of you today. Both are deep in the grip of addictions. Neither can exist without its drug of choice. Alcohol or heroin for the addict, money for the war machine. Each will do anything to fix it, to have it, even risking system failure and death. Addictions are autonomous, and those who know best will tell you nothing, and no one can save them but themselves. The war machine, too, is self-directed, free, untethered, unanswerable to no authority, no governance but its own. Just as the addict's out-of-control behavior breaks down and humiliates love and trust and hope in those who care and tramples their loyalty and support in the mud, so the rabid, fathomless, ungovernable greed of the war machine has broken and deceived and betrayed the American people, who stand in the same violated, scorned relation to it as a soul-scarred Al-Anon wife to a mad, lost drunk, or heartbreaking, brutalized child to a smack-ravished parent. They will tell you, the wise ones, that the only sane way to treat an addict is with tough love, accepting that it's horrific, and this is the decision that you have to make if you want to help the person get out of that addiction. You have to at some point simply say no more, no more support. And everyone needs some support to do the right thing, and everyone needs some support to do the wrong thing. But the great difference in this case, is, of course, is that while the addict can destroy both himself and those who love him most, the war machine we continue to feed left and right. Just take a look for a moment. Bernie Sanders, one of the biggest supporters of the war machine. And by the way, he's also a great supporter, and I support him in this, in free public education and a lot of the ways that we dehumanize people and making poverty a crime. But when it comes to supporting the war machine, he's all in. So if we continue to feed its appalling disease, then it's going to destroy us all. And tragically, we American enablers have lacked the courage to confront the addiction of the war machine. We excuse it as if its abuse of and contempt for us and our well-being was natural and inevitable. We've made a codependent deal with this voracious being, allowing it to bleed us dry financially to sustain its habit because it claims to love us, must protect us, and has to have our money. Lying, deception, denial are the techniques of addiction. All have been employed to convince us that its disease makes us safe, when in truth, everything it does robs and cheats our society, bringing us decay and ruin and misery at home, and anger and hatred and scorn around the world. So in conclusion, love never had anything to do with citizens' support for the war machine, of course, at least not for the sane. It was always fear that was used to enslave us. And this should be liberating. Perhaps if Americans could once see through the toxic cloud of cloddish, vapid, idiotic propaganda and realize that no nation on earth threatens us as a people, they might turn their justifiable wrath on the mainlining monster that jeopardizes our society and our lives. It's the only way to detox monstrous war machines. And I would concur with that. But I just want to go just a bit further. Recently, I had a person in an airport when I was flying back to New York, came over, and we had a delay. And so, Gary, can I share some thoughts with you? I said, yeah. He says, well, listen, I download the program at night, and I listen to it before I go to bed. And sometimes it's very disturbing, some of the issues, because you go at it real hard, and you're not willing to butter it. It's really toxic. And I said, well, I said, if I'm going to tell you the truth, I'm going to tell it to you. What if I sugarcoated the truth to such a degree that it might be palatable to listen to, but it lost what it was about? And he said, let me give you an example. He said, I'm a Democrat. I'm a liberal Democrat, and I voted for Hillary Clinton. And I really took umbrage with the fact that you played a special about the Clinton Chronicles, and I couldn't listen to it. I said, did you find anything inaccurate in it? He said, that's not the point. The point is that she's for women, and she's for children, and she's for the things that we all need. And I said, but had you watched the Clinton Chronicles clear through, you would have seen that's not the case. So then I asked, is she for the women and children of Libya? Because that was the most advanced, educated, long-lived, happy, and prosperous country out of 54 countries in Africa. It was totally destroyed by her. Was she and her husband for the women and children of Rwanda? They stood back and wouldn't call it genocide and wouldn't interfere. In fact, kept the person on the ground who was head of the UN from interfering, saving lives. Was she for the 500,000 Iraqi children who died because of her and her husband's sanctions on Iraq? Was she for the children and the women of Syria, where they had intended to invade it for decades? So I said, so you may not like to hear that, but it's historically factual. And I said, so what happens is one day we have so embraced an ideology, so believed in their truths, that we refuse to acknowledge that they've done anything that would allow us to pull back or separate ourselves from them. And I said, that's one of the most challenging things in the world. So I understand your concern, but try to go to neutral. Look at the facts, then do your own homework. If I could come up with those facts, so could you. And also, how many other women who have no political animus by anyone, who've been major contributors to the public good and not for their own profit, how many can you name? Well, Elizabeth, no, she's a politician. Tell me someone who's not a politician. And I said, I could name you hundreds. So I started giving him women's names. He had never heard of any. I said, now, why would you assume that Hillary Clinton is the only woman qualified to be president when she has all this baggage and is so corrupt, and I could name you hundreds of women who would make wonderful presidents for everyone? I said, so this is nothing more than an opportunity for you to start digging deeper, looking for the truth beyond your ideological conditioning. And George from Florida. George, you're the last word today. What would you have to? What would you like to share with us?
Yes. Hello, Gary.
Hi.
Can you hear me? Yeah. Okay. Earlier you mentioned the story about a bicyclist helping a lady or
yes.
something like that. I live in our hometown of Naples, and I'm a jogger. And about a year ago, I was jogging, and I noticed a car stranded, and I apparently needing help. So I approached them, and I said, there were two ladies and a baby in there. And I said, ladies, do you need help? You okay? They said, we ran out of gas. I said, okay, there's a gas station 3 miles from here. If you have a container, I'll go get you some gas. They said, oh, please, yes, okay. So they give me a container, and I get to go, and I realized I had no money on me. So I said, ladies, I'm sorry, I have no money. So they gave me $5. So I ran to this gas station, and I like an idiot, I filled up the thing with $5. I could have put a dollar in there so they can drive there. Anyway, so I go back. I filled up the tank with the $5 gas. I said, ladies, you're okay now. You can go. They're fine, okay. So I go to leave, slowly leaving, and I'm expecting something, but I didn't hear a thank you. So I walk away, and I come home totally disappointed, but if it happens again tomorrow, I will still help people. But I'm just relating this story to say, when people are helped, they should appreciate and say thank you, maybe.
George, I would look at it differently. Try looking at it this way. If you're helping someone to get some positive feedback, a thank you or appreciative response, you're doing it for the wrong reason. You should help people because that's a part of your spiritual mandate. That's your hardwired appreciation that you have been given the gift to help another human being. In your case, going 3 miles to a filling station. The fact that you're honoring your higher moral self is more than enough thanks that you need. You don't need anyone else to respond. Look, there are a lot of times in life where you help people and they won't appreciate it. You shouldn't feel bad about that. There was a study by Dr. Lawrence Lashan, a great psychologist. I work with him at the Institute of Applied Biology, and he wrote a very important seminal book, and it showed that completely healthy women who had no cancer in their family were far more likely to develop breast cancer if they had relationships where they did for others, but they weren't appreciated, where there weren't the thank yous, because then they internalized that, and it became a negative energy. So just remember, whatever you do, it does not need a witness for the universe to know that you've done it, nor an appreciation. Because we're not merely here to get other people's feedback. We're here to give what we can. If you have a gift, if your gift is empathy, if your gift is insight, if your gift is healing, if your gift is compassion, you give it. You become that essential person to allow people to appreciate, wow, someone did something nice for me. You don't know what those women would later think. But sooner or later, in their lives, I'm sure there'll be a moment where they stop and thought, you know something, we didn't even say thank you to that guy. Okay. That's their lesson to learn, not yours. I appreciate you calling in, George, and sharing your experience. Thank you very much. I want to thank all of you for listening today, and I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.